Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast. This is the B segment. The Bs are always great guests, and we have a spectacular one for you today. Joseph Lombardi is not only a physician, but he's a leading vascular surgeon with expertise in minimally invasive endovascular therapy. What does that mean? Well, we'll find out in a few seconds. He's at the Cooper Health facility in New Jersey. And as usual, we are brought to you by Persona Nutrition. You can get supplements personalized just for you. And if you want to have some fun, take the free online assessment to do so. You can go to mypersona.com and you can discover vitamins and supplements personalized for your needs. Thanks very much for patronizing them. They're a wonderful company. Dr. Lombardi is brought to us, that is, he has sponsorship from the Society of Vascular Surgery. That means he's probably a vascular surgeon, and he's talking to us about type B aortic dissection, and we're going to find out what that means, but it is in the bailiwick of vascular surgery, which is surgery on the great blood vessels of the body. Thanks very much, Dr. Lombardi, for coming along and participating in this. What got you interested in vascular surgery?
Thanks again for the invite. Yeah, so vascular surgery had appealed to me as a medical student. And initially when I decided I wanted to be a surgeon, then I got put on a rotation to do vascular surgery. And it just seemed like the complexity of the patients and the stake in the game, so to speak, was just so much more elevated. And the problem solving, the anatomical exposures, the different types of ways to treat patients, sick patients at that, really drew me to it.
So what he's talking about is that this is both very difficult surgery, that is, the surgery is not routine, and there's a lot of decisions you make as you go along, but in addition, that both the technical and judgment skill of the surgeon makes a real difference to outcome and complication rate and return to function rate of the patient. So I admire this. I got to do anesthesia for cardiac and vascular procedures for the early part of my medical life and got to work with some of the great vascular surgeons of the prior and current era. So what is an aortic dissection, Dr. Lombardi?
So an aortic dissection is where there is a tear in the inner lining of your aorta. And by the inner lining, I mean the aorta is composed up of three layers, an intima, media, and adventitia from the inside out. And the intima is either overstretched or damaged in such a way that a tear occurs and tracking blood into the layers of muscle in the media within the aorta. So it basically creates a whole new flow channel for which blood to flow through, which is abnormal. And it can shut down blood vessels further from it, and it could also cause rupture of the aorta from it.
So we used to use a rule of 6 inches. Is that still a rule, and what does that mean? That's an aortic aneurysm, not a dissection. Does a dissection always require an aneurysm, or can you have a dissection without an aneurysm?
Yeah, initially, an aneurysm can cause a dissection, but a dissection can occur without aneurysm. And that can seem a little bit confusing, but aortic aneurysm and aortic dissection are two separate pathologies. So they can live independent of one another in terms of classification. So if you get an aortic dissection, that doesn't mean you've had an aneurysm. But an aortic dissection can develop into an aneurysm from a wall weakening. And that's sometimes the way that aortic dissections occur in the proximal part of the aorta, or the ascending aorta, secondary to early aneurysm formation in patients.
And now, one of the things that used to be is that these carried a very high risk of, if you will, kidney failure and a reduction in lifespan of the patient. What's the success rate in elective, that is, dissection repair? What's the success rate in emergent, and how have these changed over the years?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when a patient does develop a dissection, they do have an increased mortality rate. And either that's an all-cause mortality rate, meaning they're more susceptible to other illnesses and ultimately expire, or you could have a dissection-related mortality, depending on how bad the dissection is and how many organs it involves when it happens. Now, you mentioned renal failure. All of the branched vessels that come off the aorta that supply the bowel, the kidneys, the spleen, the lower extremities, all of these vessels are at risk when aortic dissection occurs. And sometimes they'll present with flank pain, or they'll present with a painful lower extremity secondary to malperfusion of blood flow to that extremity from an aortic dissection. So there are a number of ways that patients can present that are a diagnostic conundrum for some of these emergency room personnel. So you really have to have a very open mind, and there's a new campaign that's really brought about that's called Think Aorta. I don't know if you've seen that. And, you know, a lot of patients that are presenting with chest pain, you know, certainly they're getting worked up for a myocardial infarction, yet, they could have an aortic dissection. And without the proper imaging, or without someone astute enough to think that, hey, this could be an aortic dissection, that patient is literally on a timer, and time is of the essence in getting that diagnosis made. But, you know, for patients who present with aortic dissection, they're treated in a couple of different ways. And if they're uncomplicated, meaning if they don't have a malperfusion syndrome or they don't have an aortic rupture, these patients are deemed uncomplicated. And they're usually put in an intensive care unit, put on blood pressure medication, pain medication, and are allowed to cool off, so to speak, and sort of subside their discomfort and elevated blood pressure. And hopefully they can get the aortic dissection at least at bay, or they can be managed medically with blood pressure medication orally from there on. Now, if the patient is complicated, that'll turn to all a couple of different scenarios. There are two different types of dissections. There are type A dissections, which involve the aorta that's closest to the heart, the ascending aorta, what we call it zone zero. And there are type
B
dissections.
Ascending means it's going up from the heart towards the brain.
Right.
So it's ascending as if you're standing up, and descending is when it is already turned around and perfusing the rest, are involved in perfusing the rest of the body.
That's correct. That's correct. So type B dissections.
So keep going, type B. Yeah.
Yeah, type
yes,
B dissections tend to involve the descending thoracic aorta, but also can involve the aortic arch, zones 1, 2, and 3. And there are large vessels that come off the aortic arch that can involve the brain. And, you know, certainly stroke is one of the presenting symptoms that a patient can present with aortic dissection. But if the type A dissection and it involves that area closest to the heart, well, the coronary arteries and the valve is at risk. So this is a surgical emergency. These patients have to get, 99% of the time, have to get wheeled to the operating room for what we call a central decompression, or to really replace that segment of the aorta and alleviate any pressure that may put on the coronary vessels and give the patient a bad outcome. And that is a time-sensitive an operation. You know, 1% of patients per hour, your risk of death is 1% per hour waiting. So as the clock ticks, your chances of mortality continue to escalate. And then there's that type B dissection, where if it's uncomplicated, we watch it. If it's complicated with a malperfusion or rupture situation, then the patient can have what's called an endovascular repair. So this is what's changed over the last 10 years. A lot of research into endoluminal repair or relining the torn aorta, covering that tear with a stent graft that's inserted through the groin. And literally, you can alleviate this whole malperfusion event by plugging the hole, so to speak, with a new graft on the inner lining of the aorta that's deployed with a very lengthy delivery system. And this is the mainstay of our current research. It's the mainstay of my research. We've published extensively on it and we've had numerous clinical trials that have provided ample data that show how effective this has been compared to the open counterpart that had preceded it. You know, you could have over a 30% mortality rate for patients with open surgical reconstruction in the setting of an acute dissection. And now we've reduced it to about 5-6% with endoluminal therapy.
Now, talk about what endoluminal therapy is. Do you go in through a blood vessel? How do you get into to the vessels? And is it working on the inside of the vessel? Is it working on the outside of the vessel? Do you go through the belly? Do you go through a blood vessel? Give us a little more specifics on that.
Yeah, great question. So what we'll do is introduce a little needle through the skin into the femoral artery right next to the groin. It's an artery that has a very suitable diameter for introducing a larger delivery system. And we get a wire up inside that artery and place it just above the heart. So you literally have a guide wire or a rail, if you will, that guides the delivery system that literally travels with inside your blood vessels and then is placed using a very complex imaging system in the operating room, which we call a hybrid suite, that has the sophisticated imaging to allow us to guide these products into the blood vessel in question. And then we literally unsheathe these stents that are covered with fabric. So it's called a stent graft. So it's a tube, if you will, that's constrained. And then when the sheath is taken off of this product, it basically assumes the diameter that is prescribed for that particular size of aorta. And it'll literally cover any segment of the aorta that you want. And it has, again, multiple lengths, multiple diameters that you can choose from, depending on the patient's presentation and anatomy.
Now, what about blood flow during this? Does when you're inserting this, do you have to stop blood flow in some way? Do you continue blood flow? Does the blood flow hinder the placement of the what would be called the endoluminal or inside the luminal graft, inside the lumen graft?
Yeah, the delivery system itself have decreased in size significantly. So the issue of ischemia to the leg has dropped significantly due to, you know, obstruction from that delivery system. And also it's inconsequential up in the thoracic aorta because the diameter of that vessel is so much bigger than the actual delivery system. So we don't intentionally create a malperfusion with delivery of the system unless we choose to cover the left subclavian artery, which may not be involved with the aortic dissection. So frequently, we have to cover the subclavian artery when we do that, which has found to be pretty well tolerated in the acute situation.
So if I was going to ask you, when you go to evaluate a patient who's had a suspected aortic dissection type B, that is the descending one, what do you look for as signs that give you a prognostic value? Do you look for pulse? Do you look for color of the skin? Do you look for mentation? What are the things you look for, Dr. Lombardi? And I should tell our listeners that Dr. Lombardi's website, if you will, or the one for him, is Cooper Health, cooperhealth.org/doctors/Joseph, Joseph, dash Lombardi, Lombardi, dash MD. That's a tough one. Cooperhealth.org. And then I'll bet if you search vascular surgeons, you'll find a picture of Dr. Lombardi, but it's cooperhealth.org /doctors/Joseph-Lombardi-MD. So Dr. Lombardi, where I was asking was, are there prognostic signs that you can get from physical findings such as pulse or color of the skin or mentation or blood pressure, something that you look for when you're first approaching the patient with back pain or pain that might indicate a type B aortic dissection?
Yeah, that's a great question. The true answer here is it can present in such a variety of ways. And the astute ER physician is going to get a really good history from this patient. It's going to ascertain whether or not this patient has had a history of aneurysm in their family or a history of dissection. That'll cover the genetic influence that aortic dissection is known to have. They're also going to talk about, you know, whether the patient's got a history of hypertension, which is also a risk factor. The patient's presentation and physical exam, signs and symptoms, they'll describe a tearing back pain. Something's ripping in their chest and their left chest along their back. This is a very common symptom. Or if the patient presents with a stroke or a pulseless arm, a pulseless leg, may present in renal failure. So any vascular bed that is obstructed can be the first sign that something is wrong and that aortic dissection can be the cause of it. So you really need your inspector there. You need somebody who can really sniff out these signs, clues, and history and piece it together. And if they get a CT angiogram or a CAT scan, that'll nail a diagnosis. And that'll get the patient properly cohorted and the right docs to get down there and fix it.
We've been talking with Joseph Lombardi, Cooper Health's vascular surgeon, who's representing today the Society of Vascular Surgeons, talking about type B aortic dissection. And as usual, we're sponsored by Persona Nutrition. You can get daily vitamin packs personalized to you. Can you imagine that? Personalized. So our sponsor, and we're proud of it, is Persona Nutrition. I take my personalized supplements, and you can too. Take the free online assessment and get recommendations at mypersona.com. This is 1015B, the guest segment. At 1020, remember, we're going to have a special double segment. Both the A and B will be devoted to longevity. Both the A and B devoted to longevity on 1020, which is a little more than a month from now. I want to thank Caitlin for great engineering. Dr. Lombardi, any final thoughts? Now, smoking used to be a major risk factor for type B aortic dissection, in addition to hypertension that was less than perfectly treated or not treated at all. Is that how common is smoking in this now?
Well, it is, for any pathology involving the aorta or its associated vessels, smoking is still a pretty nasty actor. So I'd say that, if you do smoke, that is something that, you'll want to curb it back and quit, particularly if you got a hypertension, and after that, there's diabetes or high cholesterol. If you've got that, you've got the quadrifecta of maladies that can really promote poor vascular health. The other thing that I'd like to leave you with is that, a lot of notable celebrities have been diagnosed or succumbed to aortic dissection, notably as John Ritter. And the Ritter Research Foundation has an excellent, informative website for patients concerned and that have excellent resources for them for both a genetic component and also the Ritter rules, which basically heightens people's awareness to aortic dissection signs and symptoms.
And so I assume the Ritter website, the Ritter rules, are at RITTER. That
research, Ritter research program. Yeah, if you just Google that, it'll bring you right to it.
Thank you very, very much, Dr. Lombardi. Thank you, Caitlin, but especially thank you for downloading us. 50,000 of you plus a week can't all be wrong. So thanks very much for making us a popular download. You're what motivates us to get great guests like Dr. Lombardi. Remember the A segment, always the latest medical news of the week and what it means to you. This week, we talked about sex after heart attacks. That's actually the longevity is the next disruptor segment of the week. Thanks very much for downloading us. We'll be back again next week. Thank you.